Hey, unicorns, this is Alice.
I'm Deanna.
And we're, once again, here in the bunker.
Yep,
recording. I guess we don't have to say where we are, because people know we're one place.
Well, you know, we might mix it up. We might do some on-the-street interviews.
We're on the street.
Because
it's... Today.
Wait, no, I got no street cred.
No. Nobody would buy it.
Nope. Hey, so one thing that we want to tell you is where you can find us and interact with us on the internets. We realize we do this at the end of the episode, but we thought this time we're feeling all crazy.
And front-loading. Let's front-load.
We're going to front-load with you. So you can go to leagueofawkwardunicorns.com, and any of the links or anything we talk about in the episode will be with this episode link. You can find us on Twitter at thisisawkwardhq. You can like us on the Facebooks, League of Awkward Unicorns. Or the very extremely special voicemail. You can call us.
Yes.
No one will pick up.
Will not.
Absolutely promise.
We swear and promise.
Nope.
If somebody picks up, that it's either it's a ghost.
We've been kidnapped.
Or I was going to say it's a wrong number. Or we've been kidnapped.
Or we've been kidnapped.
I don't know why I went to ghost. Ghost was my first option.
No, that would...
Haunted. Haunted, yeah, Google haunted. Voice account.
Yeah. Because ghosts are technologically savvy now.
They're waiting around for a Google voice person to freak out.
Would you like to leave us a voicemail?
Yeah.
Would you?
What's that number?
774-47-UNICO, which is 774-478-6426. So come tell us things.
Yes. If you're listening and you like us or love us or feel, you know, just okay about us, please rate us on iTunes. This is really important. It helps people find us. It helps us move up the rankings. And we need all the ratings we can get, especially right now. We know there are many of you out there. We see that you've been listening.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today? Oh, well, first of all, we have our very first interview, which is amazing. So we're so proud of ourselves because we did it.
And
nobody cried.
And we had a great time, and we enjoy talking to other humans.
Yeah. We spoke today to Adrienne Nieves, who is an artist, activist, speaker, writer, amazing human being. I've been lucky enough to know for about a year now. Through social media, as I've mostly known her as an artist and an amazing writer, and I'm so in love with her art. And when I found out that she was using her art really as almost part of her treatment plan to help her manage bipolar disorder, I knew she was one of the first people I wanted to reach out to. And she's doing amazing work. She's created a site called Tessera that helps women of color who are dealing with mental illness. So we talked to her about all of that.
So welcome, Adrienne Nieves, to the League of Awkward Unicorns. And you're our first guest.
What does it feel like? Is it exciting to be our first guest?
It is, actually. I've only done one other podcast interview, and I wasn't the first, so... I wasn't the first guest, so the fact that I'm the first guest for this one makes me feel extra special and flattered and honored, and I think that's dope as hell, so
I think that's dope as hell, too.
That's going to be our tagline.
Yeah. That's the name for this episode.
Okay,
dope as hell.
We got it. Awesome.
Dope as hell.
Yay.
So tell us about your journey as an artist. Were you always an artist growing up, or did this come to you later?
That's so funny you asked. I was the kid in, first of all, when I was a kid, I was very heavy into like English and reading and writing and very creative as a kid, especially in school. At home, I wasn't really allowed to be very expressive. But in school, I had the freedom to do that. So I was very chatty and talkative, and I liked acting things out, very performative type of student.
But you didn't do visual art. Or you did?
No, I did not do visual art. I was the kid in junior high, seventh grade, taking an art class because, you know, it was part of, you know, in seventh grade, it's what you do. You take an art class.
Yeah.
And I was the person whose art teacher was standing next to them looking at their still life and, you know, patting me on the shoulder and telling me, oh, it's, you know what, Adrian, it's okay. You don't, you know, you're not necessarily a visual artist.
Oh my God, yes.
But you're a great writer. You know, you're a great speaker. You know, you're great in, you know, drama. You know, you're more of a performing arts type of person, and your writing is great. You don't really have, you know, this, you don't have to be a visual artist. It's okay.
Oh man.
I think this is actually really good for people to hear.
Yes.
I think there's so many people who get, you get pigeonholed really early in life, and it's amazing how these messages stick with you. Just I'm just not, that's not the person that I am.
Yeah. So it was just one of those moments where it kind of solidified for me, okay, I'm not an artist.
So I want to just backtrack a little bit. I want to know, I'm curious to know two things. One of them is, did the visual art come in the form of your treatment for being bipolar, and also what kind of what the journey there was? So how can I say this? How long have you known you were bipolar? How long have you been as crazy as we are? But also, like, how did the art happen in there, and was it always evident that this was sort of the thing that was going to really help you?
I came to discover this part of my creativity, this visual aspect of it, after a therapy session with my therapist, where she encouraged me to start finding something that I could incorporate into my treatment plan that, you know, fell under the term self-care. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know, you're a full-time college student. You are a single mother to two kids. You know, you need something, you need an outlet. So I initially said, you know what, I'll start crocheting again, even though I was a terrible crocheter before. I said, you know what, I'm going to pick up some yarn and some needles, and I'm just going to go back at it. And went to Walmart, had both my kids with me, and I went to their craft section, you know, where they have like the yarn and the, you know, the fabric. And I went, was walking down those aisles looking for the yarn and the crochet hooks. And I stopped in their kind of craft paint section. And I noticed that they had, you know, like they had some cheap brushes and, you know, watercolors, and they had, you know, the tempura paint, and I don't know, something. I remember stopping the cart, and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to try some paint. Hmm. And I just, you know, I grabbed some particle board. They were only, I think, like $3 a piece. Mm-hmm. And I grabbed like three or four. I grabbed some, you know, really cheap, you know, definitely like kid or student type of paint brushes. And, you know, some of the little cheap tubes of paint, and I just threw them in the cart, and then I found the yarn and the crochet hooks. And it took me a couple of weeks after that. And, it, you know, during that time I was trying to crochet the hell out of something and failing miserably. It was stressing me out more than bringing me any kind of calm,
right,
relaxation. Yeah. That was supposed to be the goal. And I was in the middle of a bit of a hypomanic episode, and because finals were, you know, like a week and a half away, and so I was really revved up. I had a lot of deadlines. I was trying to get things done. And my mind was just so loud.
Yeah.
And I just could not slow my thoughts down. My thoughts were constantly ruminating on a loop. My brain was very loud. I was extremely stressed. And I just had all of this energy and all this agitation, and I felt like I was just kind of unraveling a little bit. So I was just kind of like just reeling. I remember during that time, just everything, especially when I was either depressed or hypomanic, everything was just extremely intense. Everything mm-hmm. that I was feeling, it literally, like, I could physically feel the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat in my room and I said, you know what, I'm going to try this. I'm going to, you know, try to pull out these paints and see if I can just like keep from either self-harming or, you know, just doing something destructive. Right. And, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And of course, I started thinking back to that time in seventh grade when the last time I ever painted. And, you know, I had the visual in my mind of, you know, what I did paint, and it looked horrible. It looked like a kindergartner had done it. But I was just like, you know what? I don't, you know, I'm just going to try it. And that's kind of just how it started. And I remember, you know, like an hour passed, and I remember feeling much calmer. And my mind was a little quieter. It had something to focus intently on. Mm-hmm. Being able to have something to focus on while internally I was processing my thoughts, or it had this very calming effect on me.
And so the first time when you were first painting, I'm so fascinated by this. What were you thinking? Were you thinking about you were going to paint something, or were you just putting the brush down, playing with color? What was the process?
I was just mostly putting different colors down on the canvas, especially because I cannot draw.
Yeah.
Or sketch.
I think this is something that stops a lot of people too, which is why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, like I mean, there's one sketch that I have that I'm sure you've seen of what I call the girl, and she is the only thing I can sketch. She's it like that, and I have stuck with that for the last 4 years because she's the only thing that I can sketch.
But I love her.
Well, also, you know what this reminds me of? Just yesterday, Sonal and I were talking. There was like some joke that she saw go by on Instagram that was like, you know, if you really want to terrify an artist, tell them to draw a hand. And I looked at her and I started laughing. I was like, oh my God, I'm not the only one that can't draw hands. She's like, no, nobody can draw hands.
No.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm not alone.
So, you know, I was just putting paint down on canvas in different patterns, and I was very much into different color combinations. I was just pairing stuff together just to kind of see what it would look like, and that was really my only, I guess, thought process in doing it.
So what did you feel when you were done with that? I'm wondering how long that feeling lasted for you. Also, like, did you immediately, when you were done, run out and buy supplies? Did you call your boyfriend and say, I found who I am? Like, I'm just wondering, like, how long did it take you to really realize, like, this was...
Or embrace it, I guess.
Yeah.
It took me... I showed, you know, a couple of my, because at this time I was a full-time college student. I was renting an apartment on campus that the school provided. So I was around lots of young college kids.
Yeah.
You know, I was like 28, 29 at this time. And, you know, so, you know, I started showing the people who lived in that area and, you know, some of the other students, and some were like, wow, it was the reaction and the response that that made me be like, oh, this isn't just some, you know, me randomly throwing stuff on the canvas like it. And they were just like, wow, especially with the use of color, like some people could not take it. But then there were some other people who were like, whoa, that's really deep. That's really powerful. How are you doing that? And so that was kind of also another catalyst for me that kind of pushed me to be like, oh, okay, maybe there's something to this. You know, I showed it to my therapist. She was very excited and, you know, supportive. I showed a few pieces to my boyfriend, and some he was like, whoa, and others he was like, ugh. but, you know, like I just kept exploring it. I did buy some more supplies. Most, again, just from Walmart.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, I'd say, about 4 to 6 months after I started that I posted an Instagram of something I had done, and I had just blended a lot of different colors on a piece of canvas, and someone was like, hey, can I have that? So, and then I had start, you know, I was started posting more and people were just like, oh yeah, I like that. Oh, that is so awesome. Oh, this is great. And, you know, that was very affirming and it was empowering, but at the same time, it triggered this whole, oh my God, I'm a fraud.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. There it is.
You know, like yeah. It triggered this, wait, but I'm not a real artist. You know, I'm just, you know, because people were responding so positively, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, overall, especially online. And people were just like, oh my gosh, you have such a talent and you have this and that. And that was very overwhelming for me. And it was unnerving and it was terrifying. And it was something that I really was like, oh no. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
I write. I do some art journaling, you know, on the side, but I, no. I'm not an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to interrupt here because I have a vaguely similar story, but I feel like I'm like the cautionary tale version of this. Where I had done a lot of watercolors growing up. I have an uncle who's an artist and my dad is an avid amateur, very talented amateur watercolorist. So at some point, I want to say it was like 3 or 4 years ago, I took it up again and I was like consumed. It was like all of a sudden I loved it and it was the weirdest thing. It was like a virus. I'm like, why can't I stop painting? And why is this like this amazing thing? And I put some pictures online and people were responding to it and the pressure killed me. The pressure of people wanting things from me. Removed the joy from painting. And I'm still like, it's this weird.
Yeah.
It's like being high and then being sober and being like, I can't get that. I can't remember what that experience was like. And I'm trying now to remember what I loved about it and it's gone. And that's
an interesting place to walk through. And how important it is for us to have community for exactly what you're talking about, Addie, you know, that because of that, you know, helping to remove those, you know, and exercise those demons of seventh grade teachers who pat you on the head and say, maybe you're not a visual artist. You know, it's like a community can help you take those voices away. And then, you know, exactly like further down the journey that it's also can be exactly, but now they
want something from me.
Mm-hmm. Like I totally get that. And I like that you hit on the word community because that honestly is what, once I started actively seeking out other artists, whether they were self-taught or whether they had been trained, that helped so much. And it became more of a, I'm doing this. It helped me keep it rooted in, I'm doing this more for me than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like regardless of whatever the response is, I'm doing this because it has become such a crucial part of my self-care. Like I feel alive when I do it. It helps me when I'm in the middle of a depressive or hypomanic episode. It helps me channel whatever it is that I'm feeling into, you know, something constructive as opposed to destructive, you know. Painting helped me stop self-harming during a very critical part, you know, of my life. And it really, like I would turn to, especially because during this time, you know, I was still recovering from postpartum depression and anxiety. I had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder for under a year. Mm. And, you know, I was a full-time college student, single mom, you know, I was in a very,
So you had a few things going on is what you're saying.
Yeah. Like just everything was so intense.
Yeah. I mean, any one of those on their own, is a pretty huge set of challenges to address, and having them all together within that time span sounds just, wow.
Yeah. So I would turn, instead of, you know, taking it out on my skin or, you know, taking it out on online or whatever, like I started turning to paint. And, you know, I had to kind of decide that regardless of whatever the response was going to be, It was going to be something that first and foremost was for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really just became this, this tenet in my life, mm-hmm. That has helped me so much. So definitely, you know, but I was able to get to that point because I started reaching out and finding other artists to follow and be inspired by and talk to. And, you know, also even just finding artists like Kelly Ray Roberts, who's self-taught, right? And it's a second career for her. So that has really helped. But yeah, the pressure to make good stuff, make good art, the pressure is, it can get really intense. So I totally understand that.
And I think also the other thing that I did wrong, which I'm now trying to fix, I'm trying to go back in time, is I just started reading books on it. Like I became, I think over reading and just feeling like it turns out I'm doing it all wrong.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
This is where it's like the liberal arts education is like, you know, a little bit of a double-sided.
Yeah.
I think I learned just enough to realize I don't know enough and I shouldn't even bother trying. And here's your Bachelor of Arts. Here you go.
And that's honestly, that's been my struggle. You know, you asked me if, how soon did I embrace it?
Yeah.
Honestly, it wasn't until last year that I fully embraced that I am an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you could see it happening a little bit on Facebook, and I haven't known you very, very long or very well, but I've been sort of following your journey, and it was just like an explosion of color and joy, I felt like, coming from you that really got my attention.
Mm-hmm. Who's this one? it took me, honestly, going to Karen Walren, Chukalunks, she had her first Lyme retreat last October in 2014. And I went, and it took me going to that retreat and, you know, engaging in the exercises that she had us doing for me to come to embracing that and remembering. I mean, the other part of this is on my mom's side of the family, especially, they are all artists.
Mm. Yeah.
Signs, you know, we have musicians, we have musicians, we have visual artists, we have graphic designers, we have interior decorators, designers.
No pressure.
We have seamstresses. Like, you know, it took me kind of remembering that and saying, you know, for me to be like, oh, this isn't unnatural. Mm-hmm. For me, this is part of my lineage. This is coming to terms with, you know what, I can choose at any time to do or start something new and fresh. And if I want to be an artist, I can dive into being an artist. Like I said, painting is something that I have, over the last 4 years, consistently turned to process whatever it is that I'm experiencing internally, especially if I can't write. And it's really honestly been over the last 6 or 7 months that painting has replaced writing as my default. I was always the person who was like, you know, if I can write it out, then I'm okay. I'm now at the point where it's like words are too overwhelming.
I feel you on that.
Yeah. So it's like I need to get my hands in some gesso or some paint, or I need to be in my art journal, or I need to be on a canvas or paper. And that has been unexpected and very surprising for me.
I think you also hit on something really important when you were talking about just, you know, looking at your roots, going back to like how you evolve as a human, how you've evolved with your mental health and everything, is this idea that you don't just have to be one thing. You know, for me, I always thought like, well, if I'm, you know, a writer, that means that I'm not a digital strategist. And if I'm a digital strategist, that means I'm not an artist. And, you know, because we have this idea that if we do too many things, we're dilettantes, or if we explore too many avenues in the world, we can't be one thing. And I love to hear you embrace this. I think it can be really helpful in healing for a lot of people to embrace this idea that you can you can be more than one thing. And, you know, there's people in the world who say, like, I've always known I've been an actor.
Right.
You know? Like, I've always felt so, like, both jealous right. and confused by that. I'm like, really? Right. Tell me about that. Because when I was 5, I wanted to be a cashier at Kmart. Really? I right. did. Because I wanted to play with the machine. The cash register was, like, totally fascinating at Kmart. It had many buttons on it. Anyway. So, yeah, like I love hearing how, as part of our evolution as whole humans, is recognizing that, oh, here's an idea. We might have many facets. Hey.
To ourselves. Yeah.
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 I mean, I growing up, you know, the first thing I remember wanting to be was a marine biologist, right? This was during the Free Willy age.
Yes.
So I was like all, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, that song was like my theme song. You know, I wanted to be up there with the whales. You know, I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. And then in 7th grade, I discovered writing and poetry and that I could do those things and I could express myself that way. And then I was like, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to be a writer like that. It just that's it. I'm going to be a writer. And then it morphed into, you know what? Yeah, I want to be a VJ on MTV and I want to write for Rolling Stone. I want to be an album. You know, I want to be a critic. And then life happened and I went to community college instead of the Peace Corps like I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, through all of this, I still wanted to also help people. You know, I wanted to be all these different little things, right, to kind of live out these the inner activist and the inner servant in me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and also the creative, right? And then I signed up for the military and I served for 4 years and then I got pregnant and I got out of the military and I was homeless for a while and I was a single mother and I moved back in with my parents and, you know, they were like, you need to be an x-ray tech, something that's going to pay money. You need to go to school for that. Mm. And I was like, no, man, I'm going to go to school for communications. I'm still going to do this thing. Mm. I don't have to, just because I'm a mom doesn't mean I have to give up who I am. And I wound up getting my associate's in liberal arts and communications. And I was a social media consultant at the time. So I was like, I'm going to open up my own like PR social media firm. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Then I had another kid. I am still wrestle with the, oh my God, what is my career going to be? But I have finally gotten to the stage to where it's like, okay, I know I'm an artist. I know I love to help people and I love to serve others. What kind of work am I going to produce or do that can, you know, that will be in the service of others, but also be in service of myself and help me? You know, like you said, it's an evolution. It's changed lots over time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you definitely don't have to just be one thing. You have a whole entire life to live, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like
right.
it's funny
just
that
be one thing.
Yeah.
But sort of what you're doing now is in some ways it a totally sensible landing place because you wanted, there was always art and there was always service. And there's something that's very service oriented about your art and your expression. It's focused. I think I want to say like by focusing inward, it also is helping other people.
Yeah. There's that whole thing of, you know, a mentor of mine, Ruth Ann Harnish, talks about put on your own oxygen mask first.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there's a reason why they tell you that on the airplane. You can't help anyone if you're not able and, you know, healthy yourself, and you can't give from an empty well. And so I think that that's been one of the hardest lessons for me also as an activist and social justice advocate is learning that martyrdom does not get you the merit badge. Does not get you, you know, all of that stuff, and that actually producing
it serves no one.
Exactly. So talk a little bit about, you know, kind of things that you're working on now and what's out there in the world.
So one way, you know, where I'm at right now is I'm trying to find a way to integrate my writing and my visual art and, you know, this desire to help people all into kind of, you know, into something, right? Something constructive. And so I care a lot about mental health advocacy. And around I guess almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I started getting really frustrated with the lack of attention and focus given to women of color and their mental health, both inside the maternal mental health advocacy space online, especially, and outside of it. And it's only been within the last year or so that I have started to see more of a focus and attention given to women of color, and our mental health. But I don't see awareness campaigns targeted specifically to us. I don't see our experiences prioritized or amplified in the advocacy space. And also, I don't see any spaces created specifically for women of color around their mental health, any safe spaces where we can kind of talk and talk openly and honestly and without, shame or judgment from within our own communities or, outside of it, without any repercussions from it. What I've learned since over the last year and a half is that there are a lot of women of color who do want to talk about their mental health, but they can't because the risks are too great, whether offline and online. Offline, in their community, in their relationships, in their, if they are on welfare, there's. And I can say that from my own personal experience being on welfare and struggling, with postpartum depression. I was terrified to tell my social worker that, I was struggling because I was afraid my kids were going to be taken away from me because who gets their kids taken away from the most? Who is automatically deemed as unfit? The system is not on our side when it comes to that. There was a lot of fear around that. So, and then even online, you talk about any kind of struggle that you have as a person of color, and then as a woman of color, in this country, and people will invalidate you, will try to, trivialize it. They'll dehumanize you. They will they will not hear you. So, for a lot of women, even just participating in a Twitter chat around mental health is extremely difficult, and it puts them at risk. There's also fear that what if someone I work with sees this? I'm already a woman working, right, in my place of employment, and then on top of that, I'm even further in the margins because of the color of my skin, or my ethnicity, or my religion. Why would I risk that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's how you've started then
To
the
Sarah Collective.
Tessera Collective.
Yeah. So we officially started it with a support group on Facebook that is secret, like total secret squirrel type. You can't find it. It's total word of mouth. You have to either friend me or another admin, and then we add you in. But yeah, you can't search for it. And that was really important for me, is I wanted to create a space that people could not find. And I wanted to create that safe space and that level of privacy for women of color, because you don't really get it anywhere.
Well, we will definitely link to all of this stuff. Thank you so much for talking with us. This is
You are my
amazing.
new favorite human,
She just you just you knocked me off the pedestal. I thought I
Oh,
was your favorite.
crap. I shouldn't have
No,
said that
you
in
weren't.
front of Alice. Damn it. Shit.
I love this podcast, and I love the work that you guys are doing. So,
Oh, that's
thank
so
you.
nice.
Thank you so much.
Yay, Eddie, thanks so much for your time. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.
Oh, that was a good interview.
Oh, she's so amazing.
She's amazing.
What an incredible
I
human.
wish we could talk to her more. We should have her on again.
Yeah, I definitely, because there was about 80 different things that I wanted to dig more into, that I wanted to have more time and
There's too much.
just really spend time.
She's too multidimensional.
She's too talented and multifaceted.
It's just annoying, you know? Like, you have so much going on.
And, like, just to be, like, so, like, good in the world and, like, active and stuff. I don't know.
You know, we didn't really go into our dark side.
Ooh.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. We'll find it. So we've been talking about what we find delightful each week. What's cheered you up this week?
I have been heavily relying on a song that I put into rotation. You know, as discussed in our last episode, I've been working a lot in the space of ShineSquad.org, mm-hmm. Our little endeavor to fight sexual harassment and social justice movements. Which can be pretty disheartening
because people aren't writing in saying, I've had no sexual harassment. Everyone's wonderful.
Yeah. Like going through a lot of stories and
helping people. Those people don't generally write in.
You know, as it turns out, no. So yeah. This is the song that I have been listening to that I am now going to play for you, Alice, for the first time. This is the song that has been keeping me sane.
Girl, I'm gonna do you right. I'm gonna do you right tonight. I won't be like those other guys.
Other guys.
I'm gonna do you really right. I'ma push you up against the wall and take you. Or you can take me, whichever you prefer. Sex is a conversation, not a lecture. And I wanna get freaky, but on your terms. Yeah. Go down on you, you go down on me. We can do each other with reciprocity. Swear we won't be done just because I've come. Why should the length of sex depend on my orgasm? Damn, you really do it like a pro, but your experience don't make you a hoe. My opinion, your sexual liberation is healthy and normal and makes you human.
Oh man, that was my thing. What's keeping you delighted this week?
So okay, well, I don't have a thing that I, but I do have a couple of stories for
yeah.
you. For some reason, I've just been thinking about that. I've just been one of them is okay. So I was meeting. Why this is cracking me up so much? I was meeting up with my book club. Because I'm in a book club.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And shout out to the book club. I think they're actually listening.
Hi, book
they
club.
They're so great. But I was always, for years, I've been like, book club? No, thank you. But I'm really enjoying it. And they're just a bunch of really great people. But we were talking about, it's a long story, but basically one of the other book club members said that another book club we were talking about was reading a book that Ron Howard just made a movie of.
Huh.
And she said, it's a nonfiction book based on Moby Dick. In the commercial, you see like a whale's tail come out of the water. And then she said, I think it's actually called A Whale's Tail. And I've seriously been laughing about this all week. Just the idea.
Do you know how long it took me for it all to sink in?
And you have to understand, like, this is a smart person who instantly was like, no, course not called a whale's tail. But I'm like, just, I've already produced the Ron Howard movie called A Whale's Tail. And it's a children's movie. Moby Dick from the point of view of the whale, of course. A Whale's Tail. Oh, I just keep laughing about it. So that's one thing. This shit just filled me with delight. Stuff like that happens.
That's great.
I just love it so much. But anyway, that's a minor story. But so the other thing was, I've been thinking about how helping other people seems to just be like the antidote to feeling bad about yourself in general. That's kind of an obvious thing.
But
it's been sort of a theme for the week. And this week, my son had to come home from school early because he fractured his wrist. And right. it's a minor fracture.
But still.
But it's a fracture.
Yeah.
So I picked him up. Did not yet realize it was a fracture, so I was not in the best of moods. Thought that he was yanking my chain. And we were walking to urgent care, and he was, you know, chatting up a storm, and I was being like, shut up, stop being so cheerful. And an elderly woman on the corner stopped us and said, can you walk me across the street?
No way.
This has never happened to me ever in the history of ever.
Ever.
And you have to understand, this woman was like a movie version of an adorable elderly woman.
Like you were like looking for the cameras.
I'm not one of those people who always thinks like any elderly person is adorable. I recognize that some of them are creeps.
Yeah.
Or just normal human beings.
Yeah.
But she was like, she's Mrs. Claus, basically. And just sort of, you know, rosy cheeked.
Excuse me, Missy.
Sparkling eyes.
Bling.
Little hat.
My God, she had a little hat?
She had a little hat. And she immediately took my arm and we began to cross the street together. This person crossed the street so slowly because she's elderly. But it was hilarious. I mean, I was trying so hard not to laugh because it was just...
cartoonishly slow.
I was like 1,000% sure she was...
She was pulling your chain.
She was a television show. Because she said to me, I'm afraid to cross the street because there are bicyclists who run the lights, which is true.
Yeah.
And it was a busy street. So we're crossing the street and a bicyclist comes toward us as if on cue. And she starts shrieking, get away from me! Get away from us! I'm like, it's okay.
Got it
covered. He's nowhere near us.
Got it covered.
He sees that we are composed of matter. He is not going to hit us. So we cross.
Good thing you're not composed of dark matter.
Oh, that's the worst.
Oh,
I hate that. So we cross the street with her. Henry and I both sort of... She tried to take Henry's arm, actually. She, of course, grabbed the broken wrist.
No!
He was not happy about that. But he was very sweet. He's like, oh, no, you don't want to touch that part. And I was like, oh, no, let me get you. So we cross the street, and she's like, thank you. And I said, do you need help? Where are you going? And she said, oh, I'm just meeting a girlfriend at the bank. Again, very questionable. This whole thing was...
Yeah.
She was definitely a put-on. And we... So we, like, let her off at the bank, and she shouts after us, he should be wearing gloves, which was like amazing. It's the amazing drive-by parenting thing that everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, and of course I'm like, you know, not going to yell at her, but I'm like,
incredible.
I know, tell him he won't wear that. And she's like waving at us, waving goodbye. So, but it's just sort of transformed our mood. We went from being like griping at each other to like, that was amazing. Was that real?
Was that even real?
I was like, I think we're in a prank show. And Henry said, nice prank. It's going to be like, in your face. You thought I was really an old lady. And you He's helped like, me.
Nice prank. Oh my gosh.
So finally, we've got another question of the week.
A
question posed by one of our listeners.
Yeah.
Which is, how do you find a good therapist?
And I don't know anymore. No. I mean, you know, there's one hand, there's word of mouth, and you ask, you know, in New York, you know, throw a rock and you can hit a therapist. So it's not that hard to find them here, but it's hard to find them.
Don't throw rocks.
No.
Guys.
Especially at glass houses.
Also, that person's not going to want to be your therapist.
Probably
not.
Throw
a rock at them. They're going to be like, let's talk about the rock throwing.
And there's this whole thing of like some therapists, like entirely word of mouth, but then some therapists won't see you if they're seeing another one of your friends sometimes.
Oh, really?
I think
is
that's
that a thing?
I don't know. I've heard it's a thing, but I don't know.
I had a
for
therapist
sure.
Who, like, I think like 19 of my friends.
Oh,
seeing.
Yeah. No, there's a couple of social justice y therapists in New York that
who
we
know
all
everybody.
I'm like, oh, you're going to, yeah, me too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When are you? You're, oh, that's why I don't see you because I'm at Thursdays at 1. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, there's websites and there's, you know, all kinds of places. So we want to hear from you. How do you find a good therapist? And how do you tell other people to find good therapies?
Yeah. And then we'll go into it
in
more detail. We'll tell you who had the right answer. We're very judgy. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
And once again, our music is by Taco Cat, Shame Spiral. Listen to the entire song if you ever get a chance, because it's really, really funny. And we could probably all relate.
Yeah.
Having been through shame spirals of our own.
Yes, we can.